This is the podcast for JNS Spine. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pincham, and I'll be reading synopses of some of the articles published by JNS Spine on March 28th, 2014. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are spinal cord injury, the thoracic spine, and the lumbar spine. Neuromonitoring with pulse train stimulation for implantation of thoracic pedicle screws. A blinded and randomized clinical study. Part 1. Methods and alarm criteria. A clinical article by Blair Callancy and co-authors. For many surgeons, surgical treatment of the deformed or degenerated thoracic spine includes the placement of pedicle screws, but screw malpositioning, particularly if in the medial direction, places the spinal cord at risk. Two approaches, intraoperative neuronavigation and intraoperative neuromonitoring, have evolved to minimize this risk. However, errors in screw positioning continue to occur with both methods, and neuromonitoring of thoracic pedicle screws in particular has been especially unreliable for the majority of users. In this first of two companion papers, the authors present the results of a prospective, randomized, and blinded clinical trial of a neuromonitoring technique to better predict medial malpositioning of thoracic pedicle screws in adult patients. By modifying the lumbar screw monitoring approach that they pioneered over 20 years ago, they were able to predict 100% of the screws that ultimately breached the pedicle's medial wall by 2 or more millimeters. In this paper, they present their modified stimulation and recording approach, including the alarm criteria used to guide decision-making. The paper includes substantial technical detail and troubleshooting suggestions, which should be of particular help to neuromonitoring specialists who might consider implementing this novel approach in their practice. Neuromonitoring with pulse train stimulation for implantation of thoracic pedicle screws. A blinded and randomized clinical study. Part 2. The role of feedback. A clinical article by Blair Callancy and co-authors. This is the second of two back-to-back articles describing the results of a prospective, randomized and blinded clinical trial of neuromonitoring technique to better predict medial malpositioning of thoracic pedicle screws in adult patients. The first paper concentrated on the technical details of this novel method. Thoracic pedicle screws were placed with the freehand method. A critical aspect of this study was that surgeons were kept blinded to the intraoperative test results, with one important caveat. If testing suggested that placement of a screw would result in direct contact between the screw and the spinal cord, the blind was broken, and the surgeon was alerted to this probability by being provided with feedback of test results. When this happened, the surgeon typically revised the pathway through the pedicle that the screw would take, shifting its trajectory laterally. In this paper, the authors show that when the surgeon acted on the feedback, the number of screws encroaching medially upon the spinal cord by a clinically relevant amount was significantly reduced. The authors note that this is the first study ever to prove that neuromonitoring feedback can improve patient safety, in this case by lowering the incidence of medially malpositioned thoracic pedicle screws. Posterior lumbar interbody fusion with standalone trabecular metal cages for repeatedly recurrent lumbar disc herniation and back pain. A clinical article by Michael Bastian Lequin and co-workers. Patients with recurrent sciatica due to repeated reherniation of the intervertebral disc carry a poor prognosis for recovery. There is no consensus about the best treatment for this group of patients. The goal of this study was to evaluate the 12-month results of the placement of standalone trabecular metal cages in these patients. Although only 46% of the 26 patients reported a good recovery in back and leg pain, 85% of patients reported at least some benefit from the operation. Patients had a history of one, two, or more previous lumbar discectomies at the same level. Disc height was increased postoperatively and was maintained at follow-up, although 2% subsidence occurred. No correlation between subsidence and postoperative back pain was found. Flexion extension radiographs showed instability in one patient. In view of previously published poor results of instrumented lumbar fusion for patients with failed back surgery syndrome, these data indicate that trabecular metal interbody fusion cages may be used safely in a standalone fashion and do not always need supplemental posterior fixation in patients with recurrent disc herniation without spinal instability, although a long-term follow-up study is warranted. Riluzole effects on behavioral sensitivity and the development of axonal damage and spinal modifications that occur after painful nerve root compression. A laboratory investigation by Kristen Nicholson and colleagues. Nerve root injury is a common source of radicular pain. It is believed to be due to altered signaling from the injured afferents that synapse in the spinal cord. Despite growing knowledge of the mechanisms of spinal regulation in pain states, effective treatments for tissue repair and/or pain relief are still lacking. The anticonvulsant riluzole has been used clinically as a treatment for a variety of neurodegenerative conditions, including spinal cord injury, and has been shown to promote axonal regeneration. Because radicular pain is associated with axonal degeneration in injured nerve roots, the authors investigated whether riluzole was able to prevent such axonal degeneration and/or eliminate behavioral symptoms of pain in a rat model of radicular injury. A single dose of riluzole was given intraperitoneally after a nerve root injury and establishment of the presence of mechanical and thermal pain. Treatment abolished both modalities of sensitivity for the 7 days of monitoring after the treatment was given. Riluzole treatment also prevented the development of axonal injury in the root and returned spinal neuronal excitability and neurotransmitter and glutamate transporter expression to normal levels at day 7. These findings provide encouraging support for use of a single dose of systemic riluzole to treat radicular pain. Compression fracture in the middle of a chronic instrumented fusion that developed into pseudarthrosis after balloon kyphoplasty. A case report by Stephen Pyrrhus and Sherry Kimes. If a spinal fusion has been performed, a fracture within the fusion mass is very rare. In fact, there are only 2 previously documented cases of vertebral body fractures occurring within a solid lumbar fusion mass. One occurred within the fusion mass after spinal hardware removal, and the other occurred within the levels of the existing instrumentation 1 year postoperatively. The authors report the case of a fracture occurring within a long-term solid fusion mass in a patient who had undergone instrumented arthrodesis more than 30 years previously. A 46-year-old woman had undergone a T4 to L4 instrumented fusion and placement of a Harrington rod when she was 12 years old. After developing degenerative adjacent segment breakdown, her fusion was extended to the pelvis and pedicle screws were placed up to L3 in order to capture the existing fusion mass. She had recovered well from this surgery and resumed her normal daily activities. Almost 2 years after fusion extension, she fell down the stairs and suffered an L2 compression fracture. Computer tomography and magnetic resonance imaging confirmed that the fracture was limited to the anterior column of the spine. She was treated with kyphoplasty, which was rendered difficult by the patient's rotary scoliosis. The procedure required multiple initial attempts with the osteointroducer before the pedicles could be appropriately and safely cannulated. Unfortunately, she did not experience pain relief, and a cleft developed in the posterior fusion mass that was previously intact. The patient refused further surgical options. This case report is meant to alert surgeons planning to extend a long-term spinal fusion of the possibility of a fracture occurring within the fusion mass. The case report is also interesting due to the occurrence of a posterior element fracture after kyphoplasty, which had not been previously reported. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.